my name is Sydney, and I am, forever have been, forever will be, Team Peter Molarg.
Whoa. I should have known. I should have known better. Hi, my name is Maya. You know, you're giving me the eyes right now. Let me explain my story. When I was reading the books, I will say, I did like... I shouldn't even say
it. I don't think you should say it.
Anyways, I was a Peter Grilly at the end.
Okay.
That's the only thing that matters. And then when the movies came out, I was like, yeah, of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Absolutely.
He's so much cuter.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give first book because he's like a whatever character in the first book.
Right. But by the third, it was like, yikes.
If you're still Team Gale by the third book, asylum. Therapy. Yeah. You need help.
Asylum.
Asylum. Like, you need help.
You need the electric chair.
The first one, kind
I'm
of
sorry.
Understandable. He's, like, a family friend. He helps her family.
Right.
He promises to protect and, like, take care of her family while she's in the Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. Like, totally understandable. He's in, like, that chunk of the book and then, like, never seen again for at least the first book. And then he comes back and you're like, that wasn't what I thought it was.
Right.
Always been Team PETA. Heart kiss kiss.
Yeah, I also saw a tweet today that Josh Hutcherson and Jennifer Lawrence are the two highest grossing, like they have the two most like streamed movies on platforms right now. And everyone's like, what the fuck is happening?
2014 is happening again, baby.
What is going on?
I am so happy to be living. I was born in the right era. I've said it once, I'll say it again. I was born in the correct era. I'm living in a Josh Hutcherson renaissance. I'm living through another Hunger Games movie. I'm glad to be alive. I love the Hunger Games.
Oh, I'm aware. I know this.
Viscerally.
I'm aware.
And I'm so glad that I'm living in the same month as is a Josh Hutcherson renaissance, where he was in a FNAF movie.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
And then later this month, we'll be getting The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
I have like zero expectations for this movie.
Have you read the book?
No.
I have read the book.
I know nothing about it. From not knowing anything about it and just watching the one trailer that I've seen, and I only watched that trailer one time, I feel like the costumes are weird.
Okay.
Like, I feel like it's too much compared to what happened in the Hunger Games.
Sure.
Where it's like, why are they wearing fancy clothes? This feels...
This is also like
hee-hee-ha-ha.
The fifth annual Hunger Games versus the 74th, 75th annual Hunger Games.
Yeah, and I understand that, but still, I like... I don't know.
Sure.
It feels... I don't know the context, though.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, still trying to figure out what the Hunger Games is and, like, what it does for the Capitol and, like, what it does for the people of the Capitol and, like, specifically, like, the president and all the higher-up people. Like, what does the Hunger Games mean? And, like, even it's the very first year that they do, like, a televised thing with Lucky Flickerman. Mm. So, like, it's the first time they're doing that. And it's, like, the first time they're doing anything, like, where it's a spectacle. Mm. Like, they've said it in the trailer, so I don't think this is, like, too much of a spoiler. That, like, you're not supposed to be training survivors. You're supposed to be training stars. We want them to be our entertainment. Well, we don't want them to survive. So, like, they're still trying to get their footing. So that's why I was like, oh, the costumes or, like, having them wear their normal clothes rather than, like, putting them in, like, battle gear makes sense to me because it's just, like, they're still figuring what the fuck the Hunger Games are versus they've been doing it for 70 years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm going to watch it.
Oh.
I don't think I'm going to read the book just because I never finished Mockingjay.
Oh, okay.
I got 8 chapters in. I was like, this is boring as fuck. And
really?
I dropped it.
I always thought...
Because 8 chapters in, it was still, like, Gale and Katniss in the woods, like, dicking around. And I was like, what the fuck? Aren't they in the middle of, like, a war?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what's going on
Mockingjay
right now?
Is not the
best. I know. The thing is, from everyone that I know that has read it, they were like, the first half sucked ass.
Yes.
The second half was amazing.
Yes.
And I was like, see, I didn't get to the second half because I couldn't make it through the first half. Whereas book number 2...
Phenomenal!
My favorite.
The best. Even the best movie, I'll say.
Dude, it's because the arena was so, so slay.
That's why I'm really, I don't know, the cinematographer for Ballad of Songs, Birds, and Snakes is the exact same cinematographer for the original trilogy.
That's cool.
I'm really excited for that because I feel like the cinematography and like just going back to Catching Fire with the arena, they made it feel so vast and like the largeness of it with like the water. I remember sitting in theaters for the first time when like Katniss comes out and like I don't know, spoilers for Catching Fire in the Hunger Games trilogy if you haven't seen it already, but like they captured that like crazed feeling that Katniss felt after she watching Senna get murdered because of, you know, what he does against the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like squeezed, she's like, oh my god, and then she's being taken up by like the tube, and then she's still crazy, she's still, and then the camera like zooms out to like where it's Katniss like on water. She's not on land. She's in the middle of, like, an ocean, and it has that crazed feeling, and then you're just like, what the fuck? Like, it's completely different. It's like, now you have to, like, swim to safety, and you don't know what's in the water, like, XYZ. Mm. That's good cinema, baby. So I'm looking forward to, like, having the original cinematographer back. I'm looking forward to, like, Rachel Zegler is, like, a true fan, and I love when, like, fans of the property are, like, in the movies or the TV shows because, like, you can feel the heart and the passion from them. I knew that she was perfect for the role when I saw the first trailer and she gave the little bow. Ecstasy, I felt. Nothing but pride and joy.
The thing is, like, I like The Hunger Games a healthy amount.
Mm-hmm.
I was never, like,
mm-hmm.
there was a period where I was reading the books and I enjoyed it, and that's, you know, while mm-hmm. while the movies were very popular and that kind of thing, I was never, like, ride or die.
Yeah.
Like some other franchises. Mm-hmm. So, I've always liked it.
Yeah.
A pretty healthy amount. I've never been, like, mm-hmm. like, even when the new book came out, I was never like, I have to read sure. this. Like, I need to know more yeah. about this universe. I was content with the way mm-hmm. that it ended and the way that, like, everything kind of yeah. wrapped up. I was like,
rah, rah, rah. No, this, the next 2 months, you are going to be sick of me because it's going to be my two unhealthy obsessions. We got the Hunger Games and then we have the Percy Jackson show in yeah. December.
I forgot about that.
And on top of it, Christmas is coming up. I'm going to be an insufferable human being for the next 2 months. Because I love this unhealthily.
Oh, I'm aware.
It means so much to me. It built a piece of my personality from the very first time I read the book in, like, fifth grade. Oh, oh. And then I reread them. I haven't read the books, I will say, in, like, 10 years since, like, early high school-ish was the last time I read them. I want to get another reread, at least of the first book in there. Because, like, the first book is just so genuinely good. And then we're going to have, me and a couple of my friends are going to be doing a Hunger Games movie marathon. Really, it's just an excuse to rewatch the Hunger Games
No, that's franchise. Fair. My sister does the same thing every year.
Mm-hmm.
Even multiple times a year, she'll rewatch the Harry Potter series.
Uh-huh.
She'll rewatch the Hunger Games.
Uh-huh.
She'll rewatch the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
She'll rewatch the Hobbit.
Yeah.
And I think there's like one more franchise that she just kind of has on repeat.
Yeah.
Mine is like...
Pirates of the Caribbean.
I would say Lord of the Rings is okay. heavily on my repeat.
Yeah.
I don't really like The Hobbit that much, so I don't give it a rewatch.
But yeah, I am just like, truly, this is like such a great year for me personally in terms of like obsessions. The Hunger Games means heart so much to me. And so I knew I was going to do something about The Hunger Games when the new movie was coming out, because I've been just in like high anticipation for this movie ever since they announced it. Because I did read the book when it came out. I haven't read it since. I was debating on reading it before, but I was like, nah, I'll be fine. Like, I'm going to be just so in awe that I don't even care. Like, I'm just like, I just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be fantastic. There's a couple of things, like, I have, like, we have talked about, like, FNAF, like, the movie ever since. I didn't have high expectations for that in the slightest. This I do have high expectations for. Probably because just of the amount it means to me. Like, it's so near and dear to me. I have such high expectations. I think they're going to do a fantastic job just from the little things that, like... And they're just little things that, like, maybe people wouldn't pick up if they were just, like, a casual, healthily enjoyed fan of, like, the bow or, like, any of the shit mentioned. I also think that people, like... We have, like, fucking Viola Davis and Peter Dinklage in that movie. They're going to slay so hard in that movie.
Listen. Viola Davis and Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
Both.
Yeah.
Those are powerhouses.
They're gonna do
like incredible. No joke.
Yeah.
Listen, I know people fucking hate Game of Thrones mm-hmm. because of the way it ended. It's mm-hmm. not that bad. Watch Game of Thrones. Peter Dinklage, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were plenty of powerhouses on that show alone.
Mm-hmm.
But he's by far.
Yeah.
Like, consistently one of the top, like, rated character, like, people liked him the most.
Great.
Even in everything Viola Davis has ever been in, even if it's fucking garbage, Suicide Squad, she's amazing. No, like,
she
puts her whole performance,
she,
like, she takes her job very seriously, mm-hmm. which I appreciate.
And just from the trailers, I'm like,
yeah,
she's gonna do incredibly.
No, like, the thing is, like, I have high hopes if they read the script mm-hmm. and signed on to it.
Absolutely.
That I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
This is something I'm
excited,
can get behind.
I'm excited to see their acting, them putting their whole fucking...
Because I'm assuming they're from the Capitol.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. So Peter Dinklage plays the president, and then Viola Davis plays the game maker.
Okay.
So she's the maker of the games, the director over the games. But I'm excited to see, like, Tom Blythe and Hunter Schafer. They play, like, the siblings, like Coriolanus and his sister. I cannot wait to see you live on stage. I think it's going to be so great. I can't wait for the edits that come out of that movie. I know. People already are, like, putting together, like, Jennifer Lawrence and Rachel Zegler, like, side by side of, like, you know, how she is paying homage to, like, Jennifer Lawrence's acting and, like, the things that she does, aka, like, the bow. I can't wait for the edits to come out of that. I'm so excited because they're already starting. They're just going to build up. But it was, yeah, it was... I gotta get to this fucking fanfiction because I'm gonna talk about the Hunger Games forever and ever and ever. And the only reason, like, I wanted to do this just so I could talk about the Hunger Games forever and ever and ever, because today I'm reading PETA's Game, which is literally a fanfiction.
It's written in his
PETA's POV.
Okay, I have heard of this.
Yes.
And I don't know if I heard it from you or from other people, but you said that and I was like, good.
It blew up on TikTok.
Okay.
It did blow up on TikTok.
Maybe I found out about it because it was on my list for a long time.
So this one... I was looking for something Hunger Games related. Something like, I didn't want an AU, I wanted it to be Hunger Games. Normally we do an AU, so it's just like, you don't need to know the fandom to like have fun and like listen to the episode and listen to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I wanted something Hunger Games related. And so this one blew up on TikTok a couple months ago. And previously I was looking at other PETA POV fan fictions.
Mm-hmm.
But my sister told me to read this one because it had popped up on her FYP like
it was probably
several times. So I was like, okay, I have to read this. So it's called PETA's Game, and the author is IGSY Grace, and it was all published, all in one, on July 5th, 2021.
Oh my goodness.
So all the chapters, same day.
Nice.
Yeah.
I aspire to be like that.
I know. It has 25 chapters, 83,891 words. It is a teen and up audience, fandoms, Hunger Games trilogy, relationships, Katniss Everdeen, PETA Mellark. It has 661,000 hits, 10,649 kudos, 655 comments, 3,116 bookmarks, and the only tag is PETA's POV.
That's the TikTok girlies putting in the word.
Absolutely.
100%.
I had heard, again, my sister told me it blew up. I had seen, you had obviously heard, like, about this fan fiction. When I actually started reading it, and I saw that it has, like, straight up little to no tags, I was like... That was all the TikTok girlies putting in the work. Because the reason you put the tags is to have your fanfiction be found.
Right.
And it's like, you're not getting anyone to find this with three tags max. And the summary of it is literally The Hunger Games from PETA's point of view. This follows the original work as closely as possible, and much of the dialogue is taken from the original and owned entirely by Suzanne Collins. That's it. It blew up because of those TikTok girlies. And I thought, who am I to say that you're wrong?
Sorry. You just
made me... to say that you were wrong. Clearly, this is good enough for all you all to, like, go crazy over it.
I'm hoping it's good.
Yes. If you have read The Hunger Games, this is, like, not good. It's not nothing new. It is literally the first book of The Hunger Games. But I thought that was great because, first of all, I love PETA Mellark. I don't know, like, any other character off the top of my head that I was like, yes, I need a point of view story from them.
I'm trying to think. I would really have to sit and think.
Exactly.
Which would take a very long time.
Yeah.
So,
but PETA was one of those characters that you were just like, yes, I need the POV from PETA Mellark. Because especially, like, as much as I love the movies, the first book is so good. Especially when it comes to PETA's POV. There's a lot of shit that happens to PETA that is not in the movies. And I understand, like, things have to be cut from the movies,
right.
But I'm glad that it was, like...
My mom was so pissed off with the second, at the end of the second movie.
Yeah.
Because this is also on me. When I read the book, apparently, I guess spoilers for fucking Catching Fire.
Yeah, just, yeah.
He loses his arm.
Leg,
whatever. He loses a limb. I didn't read that in the book because I was dumb, and I'm pretty sure I have ADHD, so I just didn't read... Because we were watching the movies, and I was like, yeah, it was very good. And my mom was like, they missed it. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, he loses a limb.
Yeah.
Maya, that's like a big part of the book. Like, he loses, like, he physically sacrificed part of his body. And I was like, huh?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That my man loses a leg.
Yeah. So, and like, after realizing that, I was like, oh, this means a lot more than it should.
Yes. Well, even in the, obviously, the whole overarching kind of cloud over the head is that they're playing star-crossed lovers, but they're not in love. Like, that's a whole thing where they're just like, but obviously PETA is kind of in love with her. 100% that man is in love with her. And she's not. She's just trying to survive. But she starts playing into it because she realizes that, like, to survive and to have both of them survive, she has to play into this, right? But then it's kind of cut out, and I wish they didn't, because it just, it doesn't make, like, the end of the last book versus, or the end of the last movie versus the beginning of the second movie make any sense. Because the end of the first movie is like, we survived, everything's great, oh my god. And then the next movie is just like, we haven't seen each other. And it's like, what do you mean? What's going on? But when you read the books, Katniss, like, fully comes out to him that it was just a game on her. She was just acting. It means nothing to her. And at that point, Pete has already fallen in love with her.
Right.
And he's like, well, fuck. So then it makes more sense that in the beginning of Catching Fire, they haven't seen each other because complications and confusing emotions about, but, like, because they didn't end it with Katniss being like, I don't feel those things, or I was just playing into it for the audiences and for the cameras, and PETA's really upset and, like, crushed by it, and so it's, like, confusing, and they're just like, it just ends with them being like, we won, hooray.
Woo!
Woo! It's kind of disjointed in that way. And I'll say, like, that's my biggest qualm about, like, not the leg. I understand, like, it's one thing, and of course, like, in the books it's huge, but, like, I didn't take it as bad. It was that where I was like, it feels disjointed from movie to movie, because it's like, they're supposed to have these confusing and complicated emotions. But anyways, I thought this was just gonna be fun because then we'll just talk about the Hunger Games, because I love the Hunger Games, and it's just the same story over again. So if you love the Hunger Games with me, thanks.
Yippee.
So PETA Mellark startles awake. It's about 5:30 on the morning of Reaping Day. He goes back and forth about getting out of bed, but he decides anything is better than laying there. He gets up from bed, and he slips downstairs as quietly as he can. Reaping Day is a public holiday, so PETA's father is under no obligation to Bork, but it would be foolish of him not to. After the reaping, there will be a spike in demand for bread, cake, and pie as people celebrate surviving another reaping. PETA spots his father talking to someone. Upon closer inspection, he realizes it's Gale Hawthorne. He tries to make some small talk with the events of the day looming ahead. It's difficult to talk about the evening's festivities. Pete is not one who enjoys the way that the people of District 12 speak of the reaping. Many of the kids his age can only talk about the parties afterwards, where they all get drunk on moonshine and hope to get drunk with someone they think is cute. It's the way they cope with the lottery, but Pete can't imagine, especially what happened with his brother Will. So as a little backstory about Pete's family, Will's girlfriend, Violet, was reaped during her last year. So if you don't know, the reaping is from ages, like, 12 to 18. So after the age of 18, you no longer are able to be reaped. So, like, when you're 18, you're like, one more year and I'm done. Like, I've been able to survive. And so you're able to put, you have to put at least one name in the hat, in this, like, bowl of reaped names. But you can also ask for, like, bundles of food and supplies, and you have to put another name in there.
Right.
So, like, unfortunately, that means, like, the poorer or, like, the less fortunate you and your family are, the more likely you are to be reaped.
Right.
So Will's girlfriend Violet was reaped during her last year, and they planned to be married in September, but instead she was reaped and taken to the Capitol to participate in the Hunger Games. That year, his family watched the games with horror, knowing her inevitable end. Winners of the games don't come from District 12. Violet hid for a couple of nights before she was killed by a pack of kids. They slit her throat. Will went on a tirade, ranting about the unfairness of the games, the sport that was being made of the district's poorest children for the sake of keeping the Capitol entertained. PETA's mother had slapped Will across the face, told him to shut up, to man up, that she would not hear treason in her house. And Will left the house that night, never to return again. So outside, the Grim Festival has reached its most chaotic. There are engineers scurrying about, putting the final touches on the lights and the cameras and the speakers. Parents watch with grim faces and kids of varying ages entering the roped-off area. PETA takes his place in line, signing his name on the ledger, and finds himself closer to the stage than the year previously. He glances around and gets a glimpse of her at the end of the row, her dark hair elaborately braided and her hands clutched at the skirt of her blue dress. Katniss Everdeen. The girl from the seam. She has an arresting quality beyond this. Intriguingly elusive, difficult to pin down. It's in her expressive eyes, her serene self-possession, her natural grace. Good luck, Katniss, PETA thinks. This is an annual ritual. Then, all too soon, it's 2 o'clock, and the reaping starts. Mayor Undersea rises. Once, long ago, there was a large world, he begins. This is straight out of the history textbook, the same speech that's given every year. Sometimes, despite himself, PETA admires the efficiency of the system. It is designed to discourage cooperation. PETA just wants to be spared, and that is also what the Capitol wants. For them to hunger for their lives at the expense of all the other kids. It's awful. It's inescapable. In the midst of all this ugliness, up steps Effie Trinket. In the gray glooming setting, she's like a garnished gemstone that you never knew existed. Her suit is bright green and her hair is pink. She's from the Capitol and she comes here every year to pick the names. Haymitch walks up next to her. He's drunk, staggeringly drunk. Climbing the steps up to the stage seems to take everything he's got.
Happy Hunger Games, and may the odds be ever in your favor.
There's the moment. That's always the moment when fear grabs at PETA. As Effie totters over to the girls' bowl on her impossibly high heels, the entire square, the entire district chokes on its own breath and is silent, waiting. There will be a name, then a gasp, followed by a scream or a cry or a wail. Until then, this tension is unbearable.
Primrose Everdeen.
The eerie silence greets this announcement, and PETA thinks this has to be a mistake. Primrose, Prim, Katniss's younger sister, is only 12. It's her first reaping. It's the very infamous scene where it's deadly silent as everyone turns to look at Prim. And then Prim is looking at Katniss. And it's impossible to tell what she's about to do as Prim walks down the stage until she starts screaming for her sister. PETA thinks she might start attacking peacekeepers, but then she takes a deep breath.
I volunteer! I volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
You fucking dork.
I love this shit so much. Takes my breath away every time. I love Katniss Everdeen. Anyways. And no notes. Perfect book. Incredible. Her words hit PETA. He feels faint. Like his knees actually start to buckle. This is allowable. One girl can volunteer for another girl and one boy can do the same. Other districts do it. Those are called careers. Where they like...
The 18-year-olds.
They like
train, yes. train, and then they volunteer, or whoever's the best gets to volunteer.
Yes. Shit. But in District 12, it's unheard of. Until now. PETA's stone still as he watches Katniss take her sister's spot. Primrose now screaming for her sister while Gale pulls her back into the crowd of children as Effie tells everyone to applaud for the volunteer. This is impossible. Not only did Katniss Everdeen not escape the net of the Capitol, she walked willingly right into it. To her death. On purpose. He's barely paying attention when Effie walks over to the boys' bowl. Effie reads the second name, and that's when he hears the boys in his row gasp. He thinks one of his friends' names was called until he looks at them and finds that they're all looking at him. And that's when he realizes whose name was called. It's automatic, his legs carrying PETA towards the stage with only one thought on his mind. I'm dead. I'm dead. Absolutely dead.
Poor kid. Me too.
Oh, I would be... Are you kidding me? I'd be like, that's it.
I'm committing suicide on the train there. I can't do this.
Not the train there.
I would not be able to handle that.
You're not even going
to
make it into the games. You're like, we're figuring it out.
I'm disqualifying myself early. I'm so sorry.
Immediately. They do. I didn't... Of course, when you talk about fan fiction, you have to cut it down from 80,000 words to about an hour of content. You have to cut down, and they put a lot of things in place to make sure that you don't kill yourself.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I mean, I would have figured as
they want to make sure you make it to that arena. There's like nets around the
building.
Okay,
then I'm killing myself on the mines right before it even fucking starts. If I'm going out, I'm going out on my terms.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would just walk right into one of those.
I just walk off the platform and just go kaput.
That's it. Wouldn't even
There's
try.
There's your fucking entertainment. Good luck.
PETA knows he's on camera the second he steps on stage. He tries to keep his face as neutral. He cannot show the terror he's holding on his face. He hears his mother's voice in his head, looks for his brother Ryan's face. It was his last reaping. He's safe for forever. Then he looks at her. Katniss Everdeen. Too thin, too pale of late. Her father died in January, and when she finally came back to school after, she seemed to be wasting away. Thin, yes, but more than that, something essential draining from her. And now here she is, going further afield. PETA looks down at her again while she keeps her gaze down. Is she already thinking ahead to the arena, wondering which so far nameless, faceless tribute is waiting out there to cut her dead? Technically, that tribute could be him, but that would never happen. If he can kill anyone, it certainly would not be Katniss Everdeen. She was the girl he tried to save. After this whole business is done, they're mercifully escorted into the Justice Building. The door abruptly opens and they come in. PETA's father, mother, and both his brothers. He knew this was coming, but there was no preparing for it. He hugs his mother first, her tears only adding to his. Then his father, who hugs PETA so tightly he feels muscles in his arms he never has before. Then his brothers, who bury PETA in their arms and sprinkle him with tears. "Try to stay alive," says his father. "I'm not even the strongest competitor coming out of District 12. District 12 might actually get a winner this year," says his mother, which surprises PETA, until she says, "She's a survivor, that one."
Rough.
Do you imagine your own mother? No faith in you.
I'd kill myself right at the beginning to prove her right.
I think, again, there's so much about PETA and the POV that, like, I really enjoy. And one of it is, like, his family, where, like, it's such a contrast to Katniss's family, who's, like, father has died at the beginning of the year. Her mother is, like, a shell of the person she was.
Right.
So now it's Katniss who has to be the caretaker for her younger sister, for her mother, and she has Gale, but, like, Gale is just, like, a friend, right? Like, she's, like, you have no obligation to take care of my family. You were just a family friend.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, PETA's the baby. He's the youngest brother. He's watched his brothers go through all of this. His mom's not the best, like, I will say. Like, she breaks my heart in the way that, like, any parent having to watch their child, like, go through the Hunger Games, like, breaks my heart. But, like, she is fully in, like, the sense of, like, we can't talk badly about them. You're committing treason. You have to man up. Like, this is what XYZ. You know, he's like the baker's kid, right? He's he's not a minor like Katniss's father was. Like, he doesn't have the skills that he needs to survive the Hunger Games. And, like, just from that very first instance of, like, seeing their different, like, upbringings is already, like, this is why I needed a PETA POV. Their reunion is too brief. They'll see me again, PETA thinks, for at least 1 week more. He'll be alive and occasionally featured on the television screens of Pan Am, but he won't ever see them again. "I want you to know that I love you all," PETA says, for maybe the last time. It seems inadequate. Before PETA knows it, he's on a train and traveling farther away from District 12 than he ever thought he would. The interior of this train is fancier than anything he's ever seen in person, and there's more food than he's ever thought existed. He's in the dining car with Haymitch when Katniss and Effie join them. It's the first time he's seen her since the Reaping, and she's exactly the same, if not a little cleaner. But she's wearing a gold pin, a bird enclosed in a thin circle. It must have been a goodbye gift, but it looks startlingly expensive for a miner's daughter. It's a strange, quiet, lonely evening. PETA's surrounded only by the greatest things, but in context, the size and strangeness of it makes it hard for PETA to settle. The next morning, PETA finds Haymitch, who looks beat. An attendant silently sets a mug in front of PETA, and he thinks it might be coffee, which he only has had once or twice, but when he tastes it, it's pure, creamy sweetness. "Oh shit," he says, "this is almost worth dying for." Haymitch's eyes glint approval, the dark humor right up his alley. Hot chocolate. Effie arrives soon after, she and Haymitch starting their strange banter, but Katniss's arrival breaks the mood. PETA watches as Katniss is served a cup and hesitates over it. "Hot chocolate, it's called," he tells her. She sips it tentatively, then her eyes widen as she gulps the rest down as quickly as she can, blowing away the steam in her eagerness to drink it. Then PETA remembers, it's the old story, to make sure that she is fed. What did I do it for, if it was only going to come to this in the end? Not only the fact that not only will I be dead soon, but so will she, despite everything I did to prevent it. "So, you're supposed to give us advice," she says to Haymitch. "Here's some advice. Stay alive," he says, and laughs as if he's told a joke. "Very funny," PETA says, swiping the glass out of Haymitch's hand. It falls to the floor and breaks, only not to us. "Did I get a pair of fighters this year?" "Okay, I'll make a deal with you. You don't interfere with my drinking, and I stay sober enough to help you. So help us, says Katniss, but Haymitch raises a hand. One thing at a time. We'll be pulling into the station in a few minutes, and you'll be put into the hands of your stylists, and you're not gonna like what they do to you, but don't resist. As if their thoughts are exactly the same, Katniss and Peeta run to the window and push the curtain aside to see the Capitol. They see the tall buildings clustered together in rows, from here to the hazy distance. And between the train tracks and the train station, an enormous crowd has gathered. As they slow to a crawl, at the approach to the station, the people cluster around the tracks, start pointing and waving to Katniss and Peeta eagerly. Peeta sees people with faces like masks, with thick makeup, false eyelashes that extend farther than would seem possible, skin tinted purple, green, pink. Katniss steps back, as if the sight of them disgusts her. But Peeta swallows and smiles, returning their waves. He has no skills in combat, so popularity with the crowd is his only possible hope. Peeta gets prepped and preened by his hair and wardrobe people. Portia, who is his Cinna, tells him that the cape he's wearing will light on fire, making a spectacle of the two in their first real appearance to the Capitol. She tells him to trust her, but he's still hesitant when he steps on the chariot. Peeta watches each district ride through the Colosseum. Just as the District 11 chariot goes into motion, Cinna reappears with a lit torch. Before the two can react, he has put the torch to Katniss's cape, which ignites at once and starts fluttering in the breeze of its own flames. The fire dances delicately on the strings of the cape, but never burns. He whispers a few words to Katniss that Peeta can't catch. What did he say? I think he said to hold hands. At first, it's incredibly intimidating, being scrutinized by this frantic, screaming crowd. But after a while, it all recedes into the background. Katniss and Peeta appearing in the screen set by the perimeter, and Peeta gapes at the images. But he's not looking at himself. He's transfixed by the girl next to him in the chariot, just as the crowds are. By the time they're midway up the avenue, they are chanting her name. And it's not a surprise, as she is mesmerizing. Somehow, all those intriguing and indefinable, fascinating parts of her, the lift to her chin, the moody lights in her eyes, are the actual fuel to the fire that surrounds her. The glow of her costumes seems almost ordinary in comparison. That's my man. I love reading him, Jesus like, Christ. I love reading him just, like, obsessed with her. Like, pathetic. It's pathetic, man. He is obsessed with her.
I didn't think you were going to agree with me on that one.
No, he is, like, down bad. Oh, he is on the floor. You're like, get up. But at the same time, I'm also on the floor. Do you know what I mean? Like, she deserves on knees. You know what I mean? Like, I love reading him just be so down badly for her. It's, like, one of my truly favorite parts. If I could have it my way, this podcast would be 5 hours long, and I'd read you every single time Peeta was down bad for Katniss Everdeen. Because it's staggeringly a lot. At the Circle City, Katniss and Peeta leave the stands and approach the other chariots. Katniss looks down at their linked hands, as if suddenly remembering that Peeta is there with her, and starts to pull free, but he holds on tighter. Don't let me go, please. I might fall out of this thing. She nods her head. Okay. The chariot makes a last turn around the circle, then follows the rest to come to a stop. Cinna and Portia help them down. Finally, the two let go of each other. Peeta stares at her. He feels silly now, as the murmurs of mentors and stylists has replaced the thunder of the crowd. And yet, thanks for keeping hold of me. I was getting a little shaky out there. I'm sure no one noticed. I'm sure no one noticed anything but you. You should wear flames more often. They suit you. She blushes at this, and she squints at him, her look puzzled. Then, abruptly, she leans over to Peeta, standing tiptoe to kiss him on the cheek. Peeta is spared the need to react to Katniss's kiss, as they are immediately summoned by the stylists. He can't feel his feet, or really any part of him except for the spot on his face where her lips touched his. Peeta makes it through dinner and a shower, the spot on his face always burning hot, before dressing and walking back into the main room where he finds Cinna and Portia. I want to thank you guys for the outfits tonight. I've never seen anything like them before. You did a good job too, says Portia. But it's not just the costumes, it's Katniss. You managed to captivate some essence of her and have it all show up on the outside. He sees Cinna and Portia exchange a glance. Are you and Katniss friends? Asks Portia delicately. No, we never really even spoken before yesterday, but everyone in District 12 knows Katniss. She's different. She has people to take care of at home, her family. She feeds them, makes sure they are taken care of. She could win this thing. She's a good bet. That night, Peter lies down on his bed and thinks for a little while about home. How his family and friends would have watched him tonight. Her family, too. They were the talk of the capital, which is unusual for District 12. And the crowds don't even know what Katniss can do yet. My death doesn't ensure her victory, Peeta whispers into the darkness. The next morning, they meet with Haymitch to talk more about the games. Haymitch is concerned about Peeta, as he doesn't have many, or any at all, combat skills. It makes Peeta feel small, like no one believes he could survive the games, not even his own mother. But having combat skills is only half the battle. The other half is gaining popularity with the capital, and Haymitch has no doubt that Peeta will be able to do so. I know you don't want to hear this, but I don't care about your personal life, kid. But the games are personal. You are a character on TV, and I need your backstory. Peeta tells Haymitch about a young Peeta during the winter when Katniss's father died. She was out of school for a while, and when she came back, she was really thin, really sick-looking. She was starving. One day, she came around the back of the bakery in the alley, digging through the trash bins, but she could barely even walk. I gave her some bread, that's all. She's a proud girl, and bread's a bit pricey. It wasn't a popular move in my house. You were punished. That's the kind of story you tell the capital. That's what'll get you to live a little longer in the games. That is also a part that I wish was more fleshed out in the first movie. Because there's, like, a brief moment in the movie where it shows, like, it's raining and Josh Hutcherson, like, tosses her bread or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not, like, as fleshed out where it's, like, he actively chose to, like, give this bread to her. And, like, that's in his mind. Obviously, the things that I've said before is, like, everything that I've done to help her survive. Like, feed her and, like, do these little things that I can do as being, like, a 16, 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I'm not as mad as, like, the ending, but I'm a madder XYZ, because I wish it was just, like, you could have given me more than a shot, a flash, but I understand. I wish it was all. I wish it was every. I wish it was a 4-hour-long movie.
Too much.
Mm-mm. Not for me. So Katniss and Peeta meet the other tributes in the first scene. This is the scene where Katniss is, like, throwing axes or shit.
Oh, right.
And then she finds Peeta, like, painting camouflage on himself. He's mixed real-world stuff like mud and berry juice and applies ropes found in the room to look like vines.
How did you do that?
I used to decorate the cakes down at the bakery.
Oh.
I'll show you. See?
Oh. I decorate cakes.
Decorate the cakes!
It's like the one thing that, and I know it gets under other people's skin, where it's like, you learned how to do that from decorating cakes.
He did. Yeah, he did.
Okay, sure, buddy.
He has a skill. I definitely think, like, they obviously had, like, the incredibly professional makeup artist, like, do that for him. Where, like, in the books, it is literally just, like, him smearing mud. And, like, that's, like, the camouflage is almost like a ghillie suit. Mm. Less of, like, painting and everything, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Where, like, they definitely went just, like, show us what you can do. Wow us. Impress us to, like, the makeup department.
He was like, let me show you my Van Gogh real quick. He ripped out his arm and he pulled his sleeve up and he's like,
it looks like wood, right? I look like I could be a wooden boy. The next Pinocchio, if you will.
Sure, man. Yeah, of course.
But in this one, it's just like he's rubbing mud and like berry juice and like taking some ropes and like.
That's different.
It's very different. Like, I understand what they're doing and it's a cool visual, but it is, I feel like it is different than like in the books where it's just like this man is just making a ghillie suit out of what's available to him. So the next few days run like this. Wake up, train, eat, sleep, repeat. Peeta is finding spots in the day to talk to Katniss, gets to know her better to make his story more convincing. And on the final day of training, they have their private sessions with the game makers. So during his private session, Peeta wants to show off his strength. He has a lot of strength. He used to be a wrestler in high school. He carries bags of flour and shit around. He's got some strength. He's a small boy, but he's a big boy. He does something like shot put, where he's like picking up 70, 80, 100, 120 pound like steel balls and just is like chucking them across the room. And when Peeta looks up at the game makers, he can tell that they've barely noticed him, you know, do you remember that scene where they're all, like, having a dinner party? Yeah. And they're like, mm-hmm. I could care less about what these kids are trying to do right now. Mm-hmm. Kind of, they're eating, talking, drinking wine. And PETA can only hope that he's made a show that they remember. And on his way out, he glances back at the door to the dining room, hoping that Katniss has something spectacular in mind for her demonstration. And she does. It's one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie, when she's, like, you know, shooting her little bow and arrows, because that's her special skill, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they're not paying attention, and she shoots one right at them through the apple in, like, the roast pig that they have. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, what the fuck? And that's when she does her little bow.
Thank you for your consideration.
Oh, I love her. And then in the second movie, when she has to do it all over again, there's a glass there, because they're like, we learned our lesson. Mm-mm, no thank you. But also, it gets me, and I love it, that, like, I love her for it, but also, like, no one else tried to do that in 75 years you've done this game, that, like, no one tried to, like, attack you guys personally.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I was like, seems a little unlikely when you have, like, spears and stuff.
They've already had bows and arrows and stuff, that, like, no one's tried to attack you before, but she's just so slay that, of course, she was the first one to do it. She is the girl on fire. PETA can only tell something went horribly when Katniss comes back. She's red-faced, furious, bolting down the hall towards the bedroom and disappears. When she returns for dinner, it's clear that she's been crying. I don't know that it mattered. By the time I showed up, no one bothered to look at me. I just threw around some heavy objects until they told me I could go. I shot an arrow at the game makers, she said. The pause in the room is intense. PETA didn't know what he was expecting, but it wasn't that. His mind staggers between admiration and horror. You what? Exclaims Effie. I shot an arrow at them, continues Katniss. Not exactly at them, in their direction. It's like PETA said, I was shooting and they were just ignoring me. And I just lost my head. So I shot an apple out of their stupid roast pig's mouth. PETA puts a hand to his mouth to hide an unexpected grin. Would he have loved to have seen that? Absolutely. Because there's no way that anything like that has ever happened before. They might make her life hell in the arena for that stunt, sure, but damn, she's really something. They sit in front of the television, waiting for the scores, Portia trying to soothe the situation by telling them that the scores only matter if they're extraordinarily high. No one pays attention to the bad or mediocre scores, because you could be doing a bad job to make sure no one looks at you. Oh, they're not a threat. It doesn't matter, you know? They're not competition. But PETA is still waiting in silence for his score, thinking about his family also sitting, waiting.
PETA Malone. Score of 8.
Excellent.
Yeah, bravo.
It's surprisingly well above average, within career range, but PETA doesn't even have time to digest this news because immediately afterwards, Katniss's score is shown.
And finally, from District 12, Katniss Everdeen. With a score of 11.
Yes, 11. Congratulations.
Everyone is shocked. Most everyone in the room is cheering, congratulating Katniss, and he can see her face. She's worried that she has put a target on her back. PETA pulls Haymitch aside after asking him pretty much the same thing. Is she a target? Can this be good? He says that it's good and bad. He's been trying to make them this inseparable pair since the chariot introductions, but Katniss has become the talk of the town. So now what? PETA says. Is there a way that we can mitigate the situation at the interviews tomorrow? Take the target off her back or something? You need to worry about yourself, boy. That's not what we need to talk about. I'm not going home. If I didn't realize it before tonight, I do now. That's no way to go in, he replies. There is no other way for me, but what I want, what I really want, is to get Katniss out. Can you figure out a way to keep me alive long enough to keep her alive? Do you have something in mind? Yeah. Get me in with the careers. So the next day, Haymitch has a plan for PETA. He knows the District 4 mentors and puts in a good word that PETA wants to work with them. The District 4 mentors aren't like one or two, but they're better than anything that has come out of District 12. They're not bad kids. They're just really tired of losing to 1 and 2 and think that having PETA on their side will help them in the long run. So they'll take you as an ally within the career pack to help you break off from the others when the time comes. And after that, you're on your own. If they can be persuaded that you can lead them to Katniss, they're scared of her now. Since she won't join them, they want to get rid of her right away. I love Haymitch. He's one of my favorite characters. There was, like, talks. And, like, listen, I'm not one for, like, sequels and spinoffs or whatever. If I could have a Haymitch TV show written by, like, Suzanne Collins, I think I'd take it.
I don't think his performance was bad by any means. But I also don't know the character that well to be like, I would like more of him.
Yeah.
From what I saw, I was like, well, obviously, like, he's smart and he knows what absolutely. He's doing and knows what he's talking about. But at the same time, I was like,
I think a lot of what the
dick.
I mean, absolutely. He's also like a staggering alcoholic. Yeah. Like, he has trauma. But that's because, like, it has been, like, known that whatever Haymitch went through in his games was even worse than in normal games.
Interesting.
But it's always known that whatever, and no one knows what. But, like, whatever Haymitch went through, it was, like, fucking awful. And so people are like, where's that story? I would like to know that story. I would also not hate a Finnick O'Dare story. I love Finnick O'Dare.
That's you being horny,
though. That is me being horny. I love Finnick O'Dare. Yeah, and obviously, like, we don't get to Finnick in this story. Sad, tragic. But, like, him and, like, his relationship with Annie, which I do think comes after his Hunger Games because Annie's younger than him, so he was her mentor or something like that. That is captivating. That is a story I think that should be followed. Thank you so very much. And I did, yes, indeed read fan fiction after I finished the books, I think my second or third way through. That was like Finnick and Annie happily ever after fan fiction because I was Sorry. Like, this is not good enough for me. Are you kidding me? No way. I'm reading fix-it fan fiction after this.
Huge.
So thanks to Katniss's antics the other day, there will absolutely be a bow and arrow at the cornucopia, so it'll make it easier for her. And if Peeta can take them out while he's with them, it's one less thing for her to worry about, but this will have to be Peeta's greatest acting challenge yet. He'll have to pretend that he's turned on Katniss to the careers, but at the same time, he has to find a way to convince Panem that it's a double deal, that he's trying to protect her. Because sponsors don't like it when people from the same district, like, turn on each other. It's, like, not. The Hunger Games, they're, like, fine with. But, like, if you turn on your, like, brethren.
No.
Absolutely not. And they really like it when the tributes have, like, friendships or relationships. Like, oh my god, they're best friends. For some reason, they eat that shit up. They're, like, do you know that, like, that Sam Pepper prank that he, like, kidnapped Sam and Colby and then killed? That, but, like, real life, the sponsors of the Hunger Games eat that shit up. Yeah. They're, like, oh my god, having to watch your best friend die in front of you, that's good entertainment. They love that shit. It makes them feel better about, like, being a sponsor and, like, sending them stuff to, like, hopefully survive when they know they won't. So Peeta's plan is to, like, while he's with the careers, if he, like, steps away from the pack once or twice and he, like, whispers her name and, like, gazes up and he's like, Katniss, I hope you're doing well, whatever you are. Like, that, it, like, keeps reminding people that what he's really trying to do is protect him, and he's even risking his life to do it, and they'll just eat that shit up. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Peeta will have his first chance to do so during the interview. It's so much different than watching at home with his family. His family probably is watching this. And before he knows it, Peeta is joined by Caesar Flickerman.
That's my man.
That's my man! Stilly Tucci?
That's what I'm saying. In that funky blue wig.
I wouldn't be mad if they just brought him back in this new movie. I wouldn't even, like, that's just...
I wouldn't bat an eye.
I wouldn't bat an eye. Oh, that's your ancestor? He looks exactly. Absolutely. 100%. I don't think we give enough credit to that man in that role. Are you kidding me? He does incredibly. Stanley Tucci does incredibly in any role he's in, but, like, that one specifically.
Yeah.
With his, like, veneers. And he's like, hello, thank you so much. I'm going to interview a bunch of people who are going to kill each other later.
He slayed.
He's so good. So he walks on stage in his, like, little blue loafers. And the conversation just chased a few laughs here and there until Caesar gets to the real questions.
Is there a special girl back home?
No, not really.
No. I don't believe it for a second. Look at that face. Handsome man like you. Peeta. Tell me.
Well, there is this one girl that I've had a crush on forever. But I don't think she actually recognized me until the reaping.
Well, I'll tell you what, Peeta. You go out there and you win this thing. And when you get home, she'll have to go out with you. Right, folks?
Thanks, but I don't think winning's gonna help me at all.
And why not?
Because she came here with me.
Girl. I love this shit so much. That and his, except for the baby.
Yeah.
Ah! Listen,
if Peeta knew how to do anything, it was fucking mansplain, manipulate, and male one.
Absolutely.
Like, he had it all.
That shit had me gagged the first time I saw it in theaters. Because in the book, it's already, you're like, I can't fucking believe you said that shit. The way that Josh Hutcherson does it so beautifully.
The thing is, too, it's wild to me that he was, like, our age. Like, him and Jennifer Lawrence were our age when they filmed that. I was like, I can't even comprehend doing something like that at our age to, like, put on a performance of a lifetime. Jesus Christ.
No, I mean, even thinking about, like, in terms of The Hunger Games, me at 15 couldn't do any of this shit. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's also, again.
Yeah.
If 16-year-old me got pulled out of it, I'm fucking killing myself. Right,
you're not even trying.
Not even. I would just be myself the entire time.
Would you?
And be like, I'm
in Catching Fire, they have, I forgot her name. She is the one.
The lumberjack?
Would you be her where it's like you get up on stage and you're like, fuck this fucking place, fuck you, I'm gonna kill myself as soon as I get out there.
I mean, if I was older and they called me back, I'd be like, yeah, fuck you, this sucks.
Yeah.
But if I was, like, 16 years old, like, teenager, no, I wouldn't have the gall. I'd be so fucking nervous.
Right.
Especially with all the preventative measures of, like, delaying my death even further. I'd be like, this, I don't want to be here.
Right.
There's nothing I will do or say that will make anyone like me more.
Sure, sure.
So.
You're just, are you trying or are you shutting down?
Shutting down.
Shutting down. Okay, I thought that was what you were going to say, but I thought I'd still give you the option.
No.
I think, like, I get it on one hand, like, the spectacle of it all. Because even, like, the careers, like, make a show out of it.
Right.
Like, they're trained their entire lives for this, right? And they come out and they're, like, in their pretty dresses and they're like, oh my god, hi, oh my god, oh my god. Like, the careers, like, do it. And then it's, like, the difference between, like, then Katniss, who's like, yeah, I have my sister. Yeah, no, I volunteered for, yeah, I thought it was really fucked up. You know, I didn't want her to survive. Like, it's such a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that I don't understand the entertainment value behind it. I watch reality television show. I think it's really fucked up.
But you're saying...
Yeah.
You would be entertained by it.
Yeah, I mean, like, isn't that the thing with, like, at the very beginning where it's, like, after a reaping, they all, like, celebrate that it wasn't them. Like, they've all gotten into this mindset of, like, well, it wasn't me. I don't fucking care who's in there, but it's not me. So we're gonna celebrate and we're gonna dance and we're gonna get drunk, right? It's kind of the same thing with the Capitol of, like, well, it's not me up there, so I'm going to put on my pink little wig and my fancy little fruity little dress and watch some interviews. And Caesar Flickerman does a great job. I love that man. Heart, heart, kiss, kiss.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, unfortunately, like, you can see where the mindset is coming from, and you're like, I see it. You guys do a really great job at making this a spectacle.
Right.
So as soon as the interviews are done, Katniss practically runs away from Peeta, and the next time he sees her, she's about one step away from beating the shit out of him. To Peeta, he's put on this big show to save her life. But to Katniss, he just made her look like a fool to the entire country.
What the hell was that? You don't talk to me and then you say you have a crush on me? You say you want to train alone? Is that how you want to play?
Stop it! Stop it!
Let's start right now!
Hey, he did you a favor.
He made me look weak.
He made you look desirable, which in your case can't hurt, sweetheart.
He's right, Katniss.
Of course I'm right. Now, I can sell the star-crossed lovers from District 12.
We are not star-crossed lovers.
It's a television show. And being in love with that boy might just get you sponsors, which could save your damn life.
The next time Peeta sees Katniss, it's on the balcony. After he couldn't fall asleep, he stands at the railing watching a party below when he hears her voice. You should be getting some sleep. I didn't want to miss the party. Couldn't sleep either. Peeta apologizes for not telling Katniss about him and Haymitch's plan. Of course, he can't tell her any more than that. But she accepts and apologizes for attacking him outside the elevator. Standing here, the night before the games, watching people celebrating their impending deaths, it makes everything much more clearer than ever before. Peeta no longer fears rejection, not even death. He's more afraid of the people below him. I don't want them to change me in there, he says. Turn me into some kind of monster that I'm not. Do you mean you won't kill anyone? No. When my time comes, I'm sure I'll kill just like everyone else. I keep wishing I can think of a way to show the Capitol that they don't own me, that I'm more than just a piece in their games. Katniss definitely doesn't think the same way based on the look that she's giving him. And he never expected her to. Look, if you want to spend the last hours of your life planning some noble death in the arena, that's your choice. I would spend mine in District 12. Wouldn't it surprise me if you do? Would you give my mother my best when you make it back? You can count on it. If this was the last moment Peeta ever spent talking to Katniss Everdeen, it's surprisingly apt. He doesn't see Katniss before they go into the games. He's quiet as he goes through all the steps before stepping before the glass tube that'll take him up. He enters the tube and it closes. He looks up, but he can only see darkness. Then he's suddenly being lifted up and he sees sunlight. When he stops, he's out in the open air surrounded by dense-looking woods. The countdown begins and he has 60 seconds to figure out where he's going. He sees the cornucopia, he sees the countless weapons, gear, food, but he's only looking for Katniss. She's 5 tributes down, staring intently at the cornucopia. She suddenly looks up, stopping when she sees Peeta. She stares at him and he shakes his head with an exaggerated movement. Then the gong rings out and Katniss hesitates, half turns, and then stoops to pick up some item almost at her feet and starts towards the forest behind her. Peeta breathes a quick sigh of relief, then walks into the cornucopia. He finds the District 4 careers inside, but even though he's safe, he's now watching careers kill tributes left and right. There's 8 in all. Peeta stops to pick up a silver bow and a quiver of arrows before following them into the forest. And this is really where, like, Peeta's POV, like, shines. I know I've said it this entire time, but this is it. Because this is where, like, the storyline truly diverts from Katniss. Mm-hmm. Like, before, it's like, yeah, they do the same sessions, they all do the same interviews. It's kind of different here and there a little bit, but this is, like, truly where it diverts from Katniss. Mm-hmm. In the fic, and I wish I had forever and a half to, like, actually talk about it, you spend a lot more time with the other tributes that aren't in Katniss's story, and you get a better idea for how the careers are trained. Because, like, in Katniss's story, the careers are just trying to kill her.
I thought the careers were only District 1 and 2.
I thought so, too. I guess not. They have 4 District 4s.
I mean, I would have given, like, 3.
Yeah.
But for some reason in my head, it was only 1 and 2.
I mean, that would make sense. They're the most, like, they're the wealthiest districts and everything. Right. I guess technically every district could have careers. It's just, like, the farther down on the list you go, the poorer they get.
Right.
But I would have thought the same thing. But yeah, in, like, Katniss's storyline, you spend a lot of time with Rue, which is great. We love Rue in this household. She has a little moment with Thresh, and then the rest of the careers are just, like, them trying to kill her. So it's really just Katniss on her own for, like, a large portion of the book in the middle there. But with Peeta, he's constantly with these careers. He's hanging out with, like, Kato, Clove, Glimmer. Like, he's hanging out with all these careers. They really don't want anything to do with Peeta other than using him to find Katniss, who they are afraid of. Like, they are genuinely afraid of. And that's when, like, they're so interesting to, like, this author put so much thought into the careers, because on one hand, it's like, they're trained killers. Like, they've been training since however old to kill other children.
Right.
But then they're like, oh, you are just a child. And you are afraid of the games that you were trained to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not Kato. I'll say Kato's like a lot. He's like, he's ready to stab at any chance he could possibly get.
Yeah.
But Bet is the girl from District 4, and I think out of all of them, Peeta has the best relationship with her.
Mm.
And the funny thing is that Peeta, while he is there to tell them about Katniss, he lies. That man lies and lies and lies. She's like, well, she's a minor. She knows how to use an axe. He shines in this moment. He just tells them bullshit after bullshit. Just fake, like, not the real thing in the moment. And he shines. He shines lying to them. The minute he gets away from them, he's, like, looking at the moon, wishing for Katniss's health to, like, win the sponsor's hearts over. And when he's with the careers, there's several moments that I had to come out, because it's just, like, death after death after death. And it's just, like, it feels repetitive in a way that's, like, it is repetitive. You're just watching several people and you're, like, you kind of become Peeta in a way that he's, like, every death he witnesses, he wants to, like, run away from them. He's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't just keep watching people die. But he has to, like, remind himself every time that, like, for every death, Katniss is closer to surviving this.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said before, Bet, the girl from 4, becomes his closest companion and the only person that Peeta brings himself to trust. and like tell that like I'm still looking out for Katniss's. I don't hate her kind of thing. And they both have this rapport that they don't trust Cato or Clove, so they don't let the other sleep when they're on watch. So they're like, when you go off watch and Cato goes on watch, wake me up, because I don't want to be asleep with that man around, mm-hmm. basically. And he also tells her that, like, he has these bows and arrows, because the rest of the tributes and the careers are like, why do you don't know how to use a bow and arrow? And he's like, no, but, like, what if you can use it? I'm just holding it for you guys. He's like, and so he's like, actually, I am holding it for Katniss. I don't know how to use this shit. So I'm going to hop, skip, and jump a little bit to when PETA's woken up to shouts from Cato, and he could see smoke coming from the north, and it's much too large to be a small campfire, and they're realizing that the forest is burning itself. It's like, the game makers, they're flushing mm-hmm. somebody out. And it's far, far into the woods, and PETA's heart sinks because he just knows it has to be Katniss. And PETA had forgotten all about the game makers. He was worrying about the careers and acting up for the cameras, that he just forgot that the game makers could just destroy the land around you to kill you specifically. And now they are leading her out of safety and towards the trouble of the careers, who want nothing but to have her dead. The careers immediately start towards the forest, looking to find the tributes being flushed out from the forest. And PETA's desperately hoping that they'll find anyone else. But of course, as soon as they crest the top of a particularly large boulder, they see a small pond below the rocks, and Katniss is sitting in it. She's just getting to her feet at the sight of him, and then in a flash, she's bolted away, back towards the forest. And Cato is cheering. He's, like, having a celebration. And PETA's getting more desperate. He's like, I'll kill him. I'll kill him right now, I swear to God. Like, he's, like, desperate to, like, keep her alive. And under any... He's like, I don't care if I kill him and then the rest of them come after me right now. Like, I'll do it. I'll fucking kill him right fucking now. But when they catch up to her, she's high up in a tree. And PETA's relieved to see her again, but also realizes this is the first time that she's seen his alliance with the careers. And it's a bad look overall. Truly terrible look.
Where are you going, Girlfire?
Yeah. You got her.
Oh, Miss Ebony, where are you?
That's not going to help you up there, Captain. Where are you going? Yeah. Okay, Kato, come on. You're so jealous. Yeah. Kill her. Kill her, Kato.
Go. Go.
Kill her. Kill her. Now.
I'm coming for you.
Come on, Kato. Do it myself. Maybe you should throw the sword.
So they have exhausted all their options, so they decide to camp here and hope that she comes down eventually. She will starve to death if she's just up there. And at this point, PETA no longer needs the careers. They've led them to Katniss. Now he just needs to turn on them, win Katniss's trust, get her the bow, anything. Just as long as he gets her the bow and arrows, he's like, I could be dead after that and I'll be fine. So his latest plan is to kill Glimmer and then hopefully... maybe, fingers crossed, we're not so sure, kill Cato, maybe, and then flee, hoping Clove and Marvel pursue him. Neither of them will have use for the bow, so it'll be left behind for Katniss. And so by tomorrow night, PETA is expecting to be dead. And he'll just become another District 12 kid who doesn't show up to school next year. His life becoming and ending in this arena. His parents will watch his death just as they watched Violet's death all those years ago. He at least hopes that he made them proud and that he gave them a victor. He thinks about Katniss. He thinks back to how she ensnared him all those years ago, and it wasn't anything she did on purpose. It was his oversensitive heart. But ever since then, he was bound to her in this strange and unmovable way that made something like this insane situation that he's now in almost inevitable. It might have ended less dramatically, with just burnt fingers, a broken heart, but it was always there, dormant, waiting for PETA to eventually pick it up and figure out what it was. Until he went on stage to declare it, he'd never really put a name to it. He never called it a crush or an infatuation. She fascinated him. But she was a fascinating person. She was just Katniss. There were girls, and there was Katniss. All in a category by herself. Always in the corner of the eye, always the first note of a song, the first aroma of bread when it was almost done, the first drops of rain. The first spot of color in the spring, she was all of these things. PETA looks up to get another look at Katniss. She's moved to another branch and she's sawing. He's not sure why. She's so far up that it's not like a branch would hurt them, but it hits them before PETA can realize what it is. Tracker Jackers. whole group is running towards Blake, frantically trying to get away from the bees. PETA is stung a few times, but the string of cannon booms is what gets to him. Boom. Boom. And when he reaches the lake, he sees Bet. Boom. Putting distance between himself and the Trackerjacker carnage, PETA heads to the woods. Katniss is the only thing keeping him tethered currently, and she's there. She's hunched over Glimmer's body, and she has her bow, but there's something wrong with her, something dizzy about the way she's looking at him. He sees a swollen purple sting on her neck, and he knows, but he hears footsteps behind him.
Run! 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 Katniss, go!
PETA turns around to face Kato. The venom has made his face purple and puffy. He lunges forward, but it's not for PETA, but for Katniss. Fueled with adrenaline and desperation, PETA jumps in front of him, stabbing him in the side with all the strength he can muster. He screams in rage and brings the sword down on PETA in one quick, sickening stroke, and it goes into his upper thigh, and PETA falls to the ground. Thankfully, since Kato is also injured, he's less likely to attack again. But he's totally exposed out in the open for anyone to finish the job. Somehow, PETA makes it back to the lake, attempting to clean and bandage his wound, drink some water, stay alive. He lays down on the grass, looking up at the sky where PETA expected his own face to be tonight. Glimmer and Bet appear instead. Now, he's completely alone. There's no way the careers want anything to do with him. Katniss thinks he's a traitor. And this far in the game, no one else like Thresh would be willing to take him, especially in his condition. But Katniss is still alive. Katniss has the bow, and PETA has to congratulate himself on his own small part in that. She will win this thing. He's glad to have given her the chance. And PETA, he's just not trying to be killed by another tribute. He may die of infection yet, but he'd rather that than have his family watch his brutal death. So he does what he's best at. Camouflage. He works a fat, thick mask of mud mixed with grass and gravel over his whole body and then lowers himself into a hole until there's nothing else to do but just lay back and close his eyes. So do you see what I mean? Where it's not like Picasso. Mm-hmm. He's just like, no. We got mud and grass and dirt and that's good. We're going to call that a day. I'm going to lay into a hole and just me, 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 me. Hachoo, hachoo. So PETA sleeps like death. While he lays in his camouflage, he is helpless when he does wake, listening to cannon fire, and just hopes that they aren't Katniss. He recognizes he's dying. Every breath is so painful. For most of the night, the tributes who light up the sky each night are those he doesn't know. At least not Kato, who he does wish he could see. But one night, he sees Rue's small face in the sky. It's the last thing he wanted to see that night. One night, he's awakened by a loud noise. It's not the usual music with deceased tributes. Tonight, there are trumpets, and the herald of the voice of Claudius Temple Smith.
Attention, tributes, attention. The regulations requiring a single victor have been suspended. From now on, two victors may be crowned if both originate from the same district. This will be the only announcement.
PETA's first reaction is total despair. This rule change comes too late for him. He's accepted death, though death has been strangely slow in accepting PETA in return. His second reaction is panic. She might still think of him joining with the careers as an unforgivable act of treason, but on the other hand, their friends and family are expecting her to seek PETA out, and she must know that. But if she does find him, he's a dying partner. He could not help her fight off Kato, Clove, or Thresh, but maybe sponsors would reward her. Has the star-crossed lover thing played well enough to inspire the unpredictable rule change? He falls asleep, puzzling over the whole thing, when he wakes up to a voice. At first, it doesn't sound real, like a mockingjay or a hallucination, or death finally coming for him. But as long as the voice keeps calling for him, the more it solidifies until it's right on him.
Oh my God, PETA! PETA!
Hey.
She's thinner and scraped up and bruised, but beautiful. She's so beautiful. She kneels down next to him. I guess those hours of decorating cakes paid off. Yeah, frosting, he agrees. The final defense of the dying. You're not going to die. Says who? says me. We're on the same team now. So I heard. Nice of you to find what's left of me. Katniss gets him out of the makeshift grave, leads him down to the stream to clean him up. Then she changes him out of his ruined clothes, removing the Tracker Jacker stingers as she goes. Keep watching the woods, she says, every time she notices PETA gazing at her face. Which is a lot. She's not great at being a medic, not as good as her mother, as she says, but PETA is in awe of her. That she came back, that she's feeding him, treating his wound, washing his body. He never thought he'd see her again. Thought that as long as she lived, his death would be worth it. But now he wants nothing more than to live with her. Survive with her. Katniss leads PETA to a nearby cave, somewhere that he would be safe in. He's vaguely aware that he's being helped into a sleeping bag, of water on his lips, trickling down his throat. Her face is up close next to his, and she is lit up by the setting sun. Thanks for finding me, he says. His voice is fading, but there are things that he wants her to know, now that he can be completely honest with her. You would have found me if you could, she replies. Yes, look, if I don't make it back, don't talk like that. I know, but just in case I don't. No, PETA, I don't even want to discuss it, but I... Then suddenly, out of nowhere, she leans down and stops PETA's words with a kiss. His stomach twists in knots. He knows there is still a game to be played. The act they are putting on and the actual feelings that he feels, they converge in him, melt together. The fire seems to spread, sinking below the surface of his fevered skin to soak his entire body. By the time she pulls away, very little about him is solid.
I remember the first time I saw you. Your hair was in two braids instead of one. And I remember when you sang in the music assembly, the teacher said, who knows the valley song, and your hand shot straight up. After that, I watched you going home every day. Every day. Even if I don't make it.
PETA and Katniss spend a good amount of time in this cave. Katniss taking care of PETA and being very sweet to him. Not that PETA doesn't like the attention from Katniss, but in the back of his mind, he knows that something is wrong. This is not the Katniss he knows. Not the girl he fell in love with. PETA isn't healing, though. He does have blood poisoning, something that neither can heal. Their only chance is to win and get help back at the Capitol. There's only 4 people left. Cato and Clove, Thresh, and the girl from District 5. Right on cue, trumpets scream in the air. Claudius Templesmith's voice booms.
Attention, tributes, attention. Commencing at sunrise. There will be a feast tomorrow at the cornucopia. This will be no ordinary occasion. Each of you needs something, desperately. And we plan to be generous hosts.
PETA tries to convince Katniss not to go, but she won't hear it. He threatens to follow her to the cornucopia to scream until someone finds him and puts him out of his misery.
You're not going alone.
Death, you need it, and you can't walk.
Katniss, you're not going to risk your life for me. I'm not going to let you.
You would do it for me. Wouldn't you?
Please. Stay.
Katniss thinks on this for a moment before agreeing, only if PETA actually starts to take care of himself. He has to eat, has to drink water instead of leaving them untouched for Katniss. He agrees. And that night, when Katniss feeds him, an added sedative lulls him to sleep, making him unable to follow her to the cornucopia. When PETA wakes, Katniss has returned injured with the supplies that they need. She was able to get the antibiotic to stave off PETA's blood poisoning, and now he can practically walk on it again. Now he's the one to take care of her. When she wakes, she retells what happened at the cornucopia. Clove's death, Thresh letting her go as retribution for Rue's life, and there's only 3 people now. 3 people between them and home. I want to go home, PETA, Katniss says in a small voice. You will, I promise. PETA bends down to give her a kiss on her forehead. I want to go home now. Tell you what, you go back to sleep and dream of home, and you'll be there for real before you know it, okay? While they're resting and healing, Thresh is killed. With the games closing in on them, PETA's mind is reeling with the thoughts of the future. This girl, he still does not quite understand what is going on. On the one hand, this was a game. He started this as a survival technique to fall in love for the audience, and even though she's been sweet on him lately, She could be doing the exact same thing. But that is what makes it more intriguing. That wonder during their conversation about families and life, that look of disappointment at the end of every kiss. Or am I fooling myself? Peeta thinks. What do I know about real kisses and false kisses? They're out hunting for food. Peeta's picking berries that Katniss has an adverse reaction to. But before she can say anything, there's cannon fire. They're frozen in place when a hovercraft appears. It reaches down to the ground and picks up the girl from District 5. Peeta's convinced that Kato must be around, but Katniss knows better. And she plucks the poisonous nightlock berries from Peeta's hand. They still know Kato is out there, but they have to camp for the night, not wanting to immediately jump to the kill. But they know they don't have long before the game makers begin to push them together. And just as they predicted, they run out of food and the pond has dried up. They have to go to the cornucopia. They hike back over the uneven ground and get to the cornucopia before sunset. There's no sign of Kato, but not wanting to be in plain sight, they go to a nearby lake. We don't want to fight him after dark. Maybe that's what he's waiting for. What do you want to do? Let's give him another half an hour or so, then we'll take cover. The night is quiet, except for the mockingjays singing back to them, until there's a strange dissonance in the melody, and then a shrieking sound. They jump to their feet, when Kato comes out of the trees heading towards the two. He has no weapons in his hand. Katniss lets an arrow fly, but the arrow just bounces off the armor covering his chest. He's running right towards them, but he bolts right past them and then turns towards the cornucopia. Peeta and Katniss are confused. There's a wild howl, and that's when they see the wolves. Katniss runs without hesitation, and Peeta follows. And we're finally here at the final fight. All three tributes hauling themselves onto this cornucopia. The three trying to survive the wolf mutts, Katniss and Peeta trying to survive Kato, and with Katniss' focus on the wolf mutts, Kato jumps for Peeta. Kato's arm grips like a vice around Peeta's neck, and Peeta almost laughs. All this time, he's been so wary of him. And now, when they're so close to the finish, this is how it ends. In a way, it was preordained. Kato kills Peeta. Peeta kills Kato. She wins.
Go on. Shoot. And we both go down and you win.
As Peeta watches Katniss trying to work through this dilemma, he raises his fingers up to Kato's hand and makes an X. Kato jerks, but it's too late. Katniss's arrow is embedded into his hand, and he falls away. Peeta slams back into him, and Kato loses balance and slides towards the edge of the horn, but he's grabbed Peeta's jacket, trying to take him down too. Katniss grabs Peeta, and they watch as Kato falls to the ground to the wolf mutts. Did we get him? Peeta says, wavering in and out of consciousness. The cannons answer him, and then that's it. No hovercraft, no trumpets. What are they waiting for? Then there's a voice, Claudius Temple Smith.
Attention, attention, tributes. There has been a slight rule change. The previous revision, allowing for two victors from the same district, has been revoked. Only one victor may be crowned. Good luck. And may the odds be ever in your favor.
This outcome should have never surprised Peeta. He struggles up to his feet and pulls out the knife, throwing it down. They don't own him. They don't have the use of his hands. Only one person owns him. He looks at her and sees, fittingly enough, the arrow pointed at his heart. But then she drops the arrow and bow. No, Peeta says, do it. I can't. I won't. Before they send those mutts back, I don't want to die like Kato. Then you shoot me, she says angrily, shoving the bow back to Peeta. You shoot me and go home and live with it. You know I can't, he says gently. Then Peeta remembers. All he needs to do is die, and not necessarily by her hands. So he unwraps his wounds, letting the blood fall. No, you can't kill yourself. You're not leaving me here alone. She grabs his hand and pours a handful of nightlock berries into it. Then she pours a handful out for herself. His hair stands up on end as he realizes what she intends. She's making the game makers choose to let them both live or watch them both die. Let their death be a statement of love, of defiance, of refusing to play the game. There's something different about her now, something otherworldly, something great. PETA's always known it. She's too good for Pan Am. But right now, everything she is on the inside, grim, determined, and flexible, is right on the outside. He's going to do what she says.
Trust me. Trust me.
Together?
Together.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present the winners of the 74th Annual Hunger Games.
The next time PETA wakes up, he's in the Capitol, and Haymitch is there with him. Katniss? Haymitch approaches him, and he smiles, but his eyes are worried. Katniss is fine. She's here, but recovering. Recovering from what? From the arena. She's being fed, rehydrated, made pretty again, he adds with a touch of sarcasm. PETA shakes his head. He never saw anyone as beautiful as the emaciated, gray-faced girl who offered him death in the palm of her hand. Am I alive? You're both alive. Good job, boy. But Haymitch has worse news for him. He's alive, yes, but they couldn't save his leg. So it's the end of this book.
Okay.
That he loses his leg.
Yeah, I couldn't fucking remember. I just remember my mom being so mad about it. I was like, whoa. And she was like, you don't understand. And I was like, apparently I don't. What?
Yeah, he has, like, way worse injuries in the first book that, like, he has, like, full blood poisoning that, like,
whoa.
In the movie it is like, oh, you're really sick and we need to get you antibiotics. But it's like, no, that man has, like, blood poisoning. They have, like, they talk about, like, his leg is, like, super shiny and, like,
yeah, I must have ADHD because like, I fucking did not, I did not recall any of that.
Yeah, so they're like, this is where he, like, loses his leg is at the end of the first Hunger Games.
I see.
So he's fed, taken care of, and fitted with his prosthetic leg. And he's not allowed to see Katniss for days on end. And after spending so much time with her, surviving with her, being looked after her, her missing presence is a black hole. The next time he sees her is on the recap show. Caesar Flickerman, our man.
My boy in blue.
is seated across from them. She's the capital version of herself. Not the earthy huntress of the arena. She leaps across the stage, throws her arms around him. PETA throws his free hand around her and kisses her. Her face is filled with longing. Her hands are tight on him. She has no intention of letting go. PETA is finally able to see Katniss's experience of the game, everything that we see in the original novels.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, at the very end, as PETA is being hauled away by the hovercrafts, he sees Katniss screaming his name as she watches them attempt to revive him. The fear in her voice is 10 times more convincing than his wistful glances in the cave. At the end, it is Katniss, not PETA, delivering on the plot of the star-crossed lovers. They keep up this ruse, or is it a ruse anymore? For the rest of the night until they're back on the train that brought them there to begin with. Katniss smiles the whole time, though without quite losing the worried glint in her eyes. What's wrong? It's the Capitol, she says slowly. They didn't like our stunt with the berries. What are you talking about? It seemed too rebellious, so Haymitch has been coaching me through the last few days, so I didn't make it worse. Coaching you? PETA thinks over the last few days. What behavior was coached? Her hurling himself at PETA on the stage? Her curling into him during the interview? Even her distress at his injury? Now he feels not so much like he's falling, but like he's landed. And hard. He knew that you were smart enough to get it right. No. She might have been put up to an act, but she's not going to distill everything he did and said and felt and experienced down to the same thing she's going through. I didn't know there was anything to get right. So what you're saying is the last few days, and then I guess back in the arena, that was just some strategy? No, she replies. I mean, I couldn't even talk to him in the arena, could I? But you knew that's what he wanted you to do, didn't you? It was all for the games. Not all of it, she says, cruelly giving him a tiny shred of hope to cling to. Then how much? You know what? Forget it. I guess the real question is, what's going to be left when we get home? I don't know. The closer we get to District 12, the more confused I get. Well, let me know when you work it out. When they cross the fence of District 12, Peeta can't bring any excitement or happiness at the thought of home. When he comes to the dining car and sees Katniss already peering out the window, the light of home on her face, it's only a sense of defeat that comes to him. He wasn't a part of her old life. Why would she know what to do with him now, where to put Peeta and his love for her? Peeta looks out the window too. He can see the crowd of people surrounding the station. It's not just their families. It might be the entire district. They sent the two off to die, but they have both miraculously returned. Something real for District 12 to celebrate. Peeta reaches out his hand. One more time? For the audience. Katniss takes his hand and grips it tightly, like she did the night on the cornucopia, keeping him from sliding to his death. It's odd, though, the different perspective brings. They were allies then, but playing two different games. They are strangers again. It was the arena that was the dream, or the nightmare. But nothing about it was real. And that was Peeta's Game by IGSY Grace. And you know what? That was The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. Thank you, Suzanne Collins. Thank you, IGSY Grace. Anytime I could just read The Hunger Games over and over and over and over and over again.
Damn.
I'm so excited. So there are two more in the Peeta's Game series on AO3. Obviously, they follow his perspective of Catching Fire and then Mockingjay. And I will be reading those on Patreon with my little sister, who is also the biggest Hunger Games fan. Nice. So if you want to check those out, follow us on Patreon, because we will be recapping them and reading them for you guys, because we love them. They're so good.
I think the audience got that now. I think they understand.
I love them so much. Yeah, they let me see. They're called Throwing Sparks and the Mutt.
Okay.
So I like the different play on the Mockingjay, the Mutt, Throwing Sparks, Catching Fire kind of thing. I love that. I think it's so cool. But I love this. I literally, if I could have made this a 4-hour long podcast and just gone through everything, I would have. Because I loved every bit of banter they had, every time Peeta was just down bad for Katniss, every difference that I could have pointed out, I absolutely would have. You should absolutely read this. I think they capture Peeta's essence perfectly, of like his mixture of like being in love with Katniss and wanting only for the best for Katniss, but also not wanting to fall into these games. Like, I think they did a beautiful arc with him of like his childhood and his older brother and what happened to his fiance, and then him in the games, and, you know, seeing what Katniss is doing and XYZ. I think Peeta is a perfect character. If I could find a Peeta Mullark, I think that would be beautiful.
Yeah.
I think anyone chooses Gale is wrong. I think you're wrong.
Okay.
And I know that's not a hot take. I don't think anyone would call me a hot take for that. No, I don't think so. I think you're wrong. I'm so glad to be a part of a Josh Hutcherson renaissance. He was so slaying the FNAF movie.
He honestly was.
He was so good in that movie.
No, he was. And from what I heard of, like, behind the scenes, because they can't promote it right now.
Yeah.
But from what I've heard from other content creators that were, like, on set or, like, around set or just people that, like, were in the vicinity, apparently he was, like, asking questions and, like, asking about the lore and, like, was kind of invested and, like, making sure that this was good and stuff, which I was like, that's pretty cool.
I love him.
So
I think he's so great.
Have you watched Future Man?
No.
On Hulu?
No.
It's so fucking
funny. Yeah, people have said.
No, I'm like, I'm telling you right now, if you love Josh Hutcherson, you have to watch it.
Okay.
It's so funny.
I do. He's the love of my life. The Hunger Games, maybe not the books. I don't know if it's a consistent reread for me all the time. The movies I will watch for the rest of my life is a thing that I will introduce my children to.
Right.
There's a lot of things that went by. Like, I can easily see that, like, you are a Hunger Games and a Twilight girly. I was not a Twilight girly. I'm so sorry. It wasn't for me.
I wasn't a Twilight girly.
Surprising, because you love vampires. But maybe not those kind of vampires.
No, not those kinds of vampires. Yeah. I'm into a very particular type of vampire.
Yes, for sure.
Get it right, Sydney.
Vampires that murder entire countries because they killed their wife. But yeah, I was never a Twilight girly. I didn't get into Harry Potter. It's not my favorite thing. I understand the love for it. I just didn't get into it. It wasn't my thing. Percy Jackson was my thing. The Hunger Games was my thing. It will be my thing till the day I die. I think they're perfect movies. They give me so much joy. I cannot wait for this new movie. I think everything about it is spectacular. I'm so happy to, like, semi be back in the world of the Hunger Games. Like, I was reading the same story, right? It was nothing new or surprising or shocking because it's the same plot beats. But I was so happy to be in Peeta Mork's head because I think he's just such a good character. And the other two ones just dive deeper and deeper and deeper into it, especially in the Mutt, because that's when he gets, like, kidnapped by the Capitol.
Right.
And he goes through all that shit.
Oh, right. The brainwashing.
The brainwashing.
I forgot about that.
I can't wait to talk about that.
That was rough. I remember watching that in the movie and I was like, yikes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait.
I felt icky.
I can't wait to talk about that because they... Justice. Poetic justice. I love the way that the author takes care of Peeta because it's like everyone loves him. He's such a sweet soft boy. He is my Peeta Mork. No better casting. Oh, I love Josh Hutcherson. I love Peeta Mork. I love the Hunger Games. God bless America. And gentlemen, start your engines. Thank you for listening to another episode of Canonically Incorrect. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and Tumblr. You can send us your fan fiction recommendations, or if you're a fan fiction author that would like to be on our show, email us at canonicallyincorrectpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support us, you can donate a one-time donation at ko-fi.com/canonicallyincorrect. You can subscribe to our Patreon monthly at patreon.com/canonicallyincorrect. Thank you to our Patreons, Autumnal River and Riley C, for your continued support.
Donate to AO3!
And we'll see you guys next time!
Bye! Bye.